Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Dr. Jessica Wood is a research specialist with the Sex Information Education Council of Canada, or CCAN. Jessica is a repeat guest on TMO, and in our first conversation back in June 2020, we talked about sex and COVID safety. But this week, we're catching up with Dr. Wood's latest research on consensual non-monogamy, and more specifically, sexual motivations and relational outcomes. You'll hear consensual non-monogamy referred to as CNM in this conversation, just to clear up any confusion. And also, in these days of Zoom recordings, you may notice some glitchy sound here and there, but the content is great, so happy listening, and we'll see you on the other side.
Okay, today we are rejoined by Jessica Wood. The last time we sat down with you would have been
like early lockdown days. We were on Prince Edward Island, that's all I remember. No, was it lockdown? Was it during lockdown,
yeah,
really? No.
Was it not?
It was early on. It was quite early on in the pandemic.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I remember being like straight up in a hibernation mode, like still wiping down groceries with Lysol days.
Right.
You know, like the days where we were like, I think we're all going to die. Mm-hmm.
So the memory of you is associated with Lysol wipes is what Jeremy
that's,
is
saying. Yeah, that's right. I'm being flashbacks to the scent of lemon Lysol. Last time we talked to you, we were doing an episode about some research that was being done between CCAN and in partnership with Trojan, and it was really fascinating. And again, today we are going to dive deep into the world of sex research, which is something that I've really been enjoying on this show whenever we get an opportunity to speak to someone who is much smarter than I am about sex. And from a research perspective, it's always really fascinating. And Bridie, you're swimming in notes here.
Yeah, I got really into this. So I printed off pages, all the pages of your study. And I haven't done my research literacy class yet at school. I'm back in school right now. But reading this made me really excited for the skill of reading. What would you call this? Like
journal, like scientific journal material.
Yeah. Yes. Research articles.
Yeah. So awesome. You
smart people words is how I would put it.
Like, well, like the, remember back in elementary school when we learned how to do outlines for essays, it's got all the components. All the fixins. It's got all of them. So yeah, Jessica, so I'm just going to read you the titles of the documents I'm holding in my hand, just so everybody can be confronted with, we can all start with the same level of confusion.
And then
work our way to understanding. So I have one document here from the Archives of Sexual Behavior called Motivations for Engaging in Consensually Non-Monogamous Relationships. It sounds pretty straightforward. Then I have another one here from the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships, and the title is Reasons for Sex and Relational Outcomes in Consensually Non-Monogamous and Monogamous Relationships, a Self-Determination Theory Approach, which I hope we're going to hear more about that, because I keep reading self-determination theory a lot in these papers. And then the last one is from a journal called Plus One, and the title is A Dyadic Examination of Self-Determined Sexual Motives, Need Fulfillment, and Relational Outcomes Among Consensually Non-Monogamous Partners.
Oh my God, what a mouthful.
I know. So
how are you not perpetually confused?
Do you use these words on a daily basis?
I think I am perpetually confused. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm perpetually confused about. So this is a couple of different studies that I did when I was at the University of Guelph and York University during my PhD and my postdoc. And, you know, you can kind of see the theme of consensual non-monogamy, relationship satisfaction, and motivation throughout all three of these. They differ in a couple of different ways, and I'll go through those shortly. But generally, I was very curious about, I mean, just generally why people do what they do, especially when people are doing things that, you know, go against kind of our relational norms, that, you know, they may have to work through some stigma to get to in order to feel more fulfilled or feel more authentic in their lives. And how are these things related to satisfaction in relationships and well-being? So that's kind of thinking about overarching what I was interested in. So the first study you mentioned it's a qualitative study. So asking people like to just write in their thoughts and then analyzing those thoughts and those words and asking them like, why are you in a consensually non-monogamous relationship? The other two studies focus on, you know, why do people have sex, and do those reasons, are those reasons linked to, you know, how fulfilled they feel in their lives, how they feel in their relationships, how they feel satisfied or not in their relationships? And is this different depending on whether they are in, you know, monogamous or consensually non-monogamous relationships? So that's kind of the overarching concept for the three of those studies.
Okay. Those seem like the basic, like, five W's of consensual non-monogamy. Like, what are the contributing factors to lead a person to want to have more than one partner? And it might seem like a really simple question, but I have a feeling that it's got more to it than we might suspect.
Yeah. So this study is one of my favorite research projects that I've done, because you read through the data and it's just a delight to read through. It has a very positive vibe of people just expressing their, again, I'm going to use this word authentic, and it comes up a lot, their authentic selves. And so based on this study, you know, it appears that people have a multitude of reasons for engaging in consensually non-monogamous relationships and relationships of all forms. So this might be open relationships, polyamorous relationships, swinging, et cetera. And primarily, you know, their reasons are related to autonomy. So feeling that they have, you know, control over their own bodies, and control over the way they connect with people. Some of these are related to a belief system. So a belief that, monogamy feels constraining and consensual non-monogamy offers more possibility for need fulfillment than monogamy does. Others discussed, you know, a belief that or a desire to connect with people in various ways. So there's this relationship component to it. So maybe that's, you know, wanting to create intimacy, create a community of people with shared values, and creating multiple relationships in a way that still maintains their relational integrity. So wanting to do this, but also wanting to maintain like honesty, communication, and trust. And then others spoke about reasons related to sexuality. So, and I think this is something that people, their mind automatically goes to sex because it's, you know, consensual non-monogamy and we're thinking, you know, sexual non-monogamy, but there's also an emotional component to this, a community component to it as well. But there, people did talk about sexuality and reasons related to sexuality. So wanting novelty, variety, excitement, or some people talked about, you know, there's a desire discrepancy in a current partnership where, you know, one partner wants more sex and the other isn't interested in sex, or they want a specific type of sex and the other person is not. Or perhaps, you know, exploring different sexual identities and expressions. So people wanting to explore their attractions to multiple genders and they hadn't had the opportunity to do that, you know, at other points in their lives. And so there's a lot of different components to this. And still people, others talked about that it was just pragmatic for them. You know, they lived in geographically different locations from a current partner. And they decided that to, in order to have, you know, they say their sexual needs met, they were seeing other people while they were doing that, or a different phase of life. When they were very busy during a particular professional phase of life, for example, it made more sense for them to be able to do this. And there's a vast variety of reasons why people say that they are interested in doing this, and, you know, also tied in with some of the benefits that they experienced as well.
Now, when you come across this kind of information through this research, what goes through your mind? Like what can this information be used for? I mean, personally speaking, like hearing you talk about these themes or these reasons why people engage in consensual non-monogamy, I immediately had this thought of like, oh, you know what? Like, that's not something that I've really been able to articulate in, like, if someone had asked me why, I don't know if I would have the ability to articulate exactly why until I just heard you go through these findings of like, what are the reasons why people engage in it? And, you know, there was some reasoning there that I was like, nah, that doesn't really apply to me. But then there were somewhere I went, oh, fuck yeah, that's me. Like, that's me through and through. So I can see how this is valuable for me in hearing you say that. But like, what value does doing this research have in terms of like the practical usage for this information? Like, how does this information get used?
I think there's a couple of different things that I think about. The first thing is that I think it kind of helps to destigmatize CNM relationships, right? Because it shows that I think one of the big stereotypes or myths that we have is that CNM people engage in CNM either because they want to have sex with everybody or because there's something terribly wrong with their relationship, or you know, there's often like a lot of stigma and framing of, you know, sex with multiple people as a negative thing. And I think that this research like showing that there's a lot of different reasons people do this and that there's also, you know, some different benefits from it as well, goes against some of those stereotypes that people have. So it can help to bring down, start to destigmatize some of that, some of those problematic stereotypes that we have. I think it also helps people, you know, kind of what you just said, like think about their own reasons and you can think about, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit more, I think, when we get to the sexual motivations piece, but our motivations have implications for our well-being, for our relational outcomes. And so if we can think about the reasons why we're doing something, are we doing this because, we feel that this is actually going to help our need fulfillment, that this is, you know, helping with some kind of growth or expansion, or because we actually truly believe in it, or are we doing this because we feel pressured from someone else to do it and we're not actually that into it, or we're afraid we're going to lose somebody? What are people's, what are your own motivations for doing something? Because those motivations are related to how happy and satisfied you feel in your partnerships. And so having those, that thought process of why am I doing this, and why am I, you know, maybe why are your partners doing it, or partner, and having those conversations together and kind of thinking about that and working through it might help you to think about where, you know, where there might be some gaps, or where there's places that are things that are going well. If it's, well, I'm doing this because it's very pleasurable, I get to connect with people, I'm feeling good. And you can kind of articulate that amongst your partners, then, you know, that seems like a more positive kind of growth communication piece and interaction. But if there's some recognition that like, oh my gosh, I'm actually not feeling comfortable with this, and I feel like I'm afraid to lose somebody, that is an entirely different conversation, kind of can open the doors, I think, for, again, growth, but also reflecting on, you know, what needs, might need to change in relationships in order to kind of move forward and make sure everyone's in a good place.
I would love to talk more about the motivation piece, because that was the first sort of thing that I bumped up into in reading these documents. Well, the first thing was this self-determination theory approach. Does that have anything to do with motivations?
Absolutely. I love self-determination theory, so I could talk about this for a long time. So if you have to edit things out, feel free.
Definitely not. Keeping it all. I love it. I love it.
So the prime self-determination theory is a framework that suggests that people have this inherent tendency to, you know, develop this unified sense of self, is the words, by balancing these three psychological needs. So there's a need for competence, which is, you know, feeling confident and experiencing like a sense of efficacy, that there's a need for autonomy. So that agency, you know, feeling that you've got like the sense of volition over your own behaviors, and relatedness. So that desire to connect and be close to communities. And the theory suggests that people who, you know, function in more self-determined ways, or are able to kind of meet these three needs, so autonomy, confidence, and relatedness, you know, are more aware of their feelings, they're more aware of their sense of self, they feel more fulfilled in life. And it also kind of encompasses this broad range of motivations that impacts how you're able to kind of access that fulfillment and meet those needs. And so within this theory, there's these different types of motivations that kind of represent this continuum of self-determination. So on one end, we have motives that we think of as, you know, autonomous motives, or we sometimes call them intrinsic motives. So this is where we're doing something because the act of doing it is pleasurable or fulfilling in and of itself. You know, or, you know, we're doing it because it feels good to do the thing. But when we're thinking about sex, it's because, you know, that sex itself is enjoyable. We want to be close to our partner. We value sex. We think it's something that is, you know, reflective of who we are, and it's important to us. And then at the other end, we have these reasons that are more extrinsic. And so that would be, you know, having sex in order to manage kind of these external feelings. So, or external things that come. So things like managing feelings of guilt or shame. So feeling like we have to do something, feeling pressured, feeling like, again, having sex because maybe there's conflict in a relationship and you're not sure if you're able to maintain it. And then there's also this state of amotivation where you're engaging in sex and, you know, you don't really know why. You don't feel like you have any control over that situation, or perhaps there's coercion as well. And so in the second and third study that you've got sitting there in front of you, you know, I wanted to look at like the different kinds of sexual motives on this continuum. If people are having sex for these different reasons, how does that impact like how they feel? Does it impact how they feel in terms of their need fulfillment, and does it impact how they feel in terms of their relationship and sexual satisfaction with their partners? And is this different if they're in a consensually non-monogamous or monogamous relationship? And, you know, kind of what does that framework look like? And I mean, if you have any questions about that, maybe I'll stop there and you can kind of, we can get into the results.
Yeah.
After.
I was like, should I raise my hand? Cause, I just wanted to know when you just said there needs the needs fulfillment. Are you talking about those three? Autonomy, confidence, and relatedness.
Competence.
So, competence. Sorry. Yeah. Competence or confidence?
Competence. So, I mean, confidence is underneath that umbrella, mm-hmm. right? So it's feeling like you are confident in, you know, whatever realm it is that you're kind of referring to, that you're capable of doing certain things, that you feel good about your ability to do this, the thing that you're, you know, whether that is, you know, talking about sex, whether that's, we're talking about like academics, whether we're talking about job performance, this theory has been used to kind of evaluate, outcomes and motivations in lots of different realms. And I was really curious to try to start applying it to more sexual and relationship realms, especially with consensually non-monogamous relationships where people are having sex with multiple people. And there is kind of room to maneuver this, like these different reasons related to autonomy, and people have a different approach to need fulfillment. And thinking about whether it would look different for people in monogamous versus CNM relationships.
Right.
So if I'm following, self-determination theory could be applied to, say, education or sex, or it's just like, can I as an individual have these three of needs fulfilled under the umbrella of my education or my sexual relationship?
Cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Is this like a framework that this might sound really dumb, but would this be considered like a psychological framework? Does this come from the world of psychology or, you know, like neuroscience? Like it seems to be steeped in like psychological wellness, you know?
It very much is a social psychology, social psychological theory of motivation.
Okay.
And so yes, yeah, you're totally right. It is great. Really psyche.
sure, perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's continue. do you need to be prompted? Because I'm just hanging on here with the, or do you know where you're at?
Continue. I also want to make sure that like it's clear for your listeners and everything too, because I know that these theories are very like, it's a big complex theory. And then like some of this research is like very complex too, and its analysis and the way it's done. So I don't want to make it too challenging for people to understand. So
I think you're doing a great job. I'm not going to lie. I am as daft as they come. So, and I'm following along and I'm loving it. So, I don't know if this would be valuable or not, but like maybe we could break down each element of self-determination theory, competence, autonomy, and relatedness, and how those things relate to consensual non-monogamy, how they relate to sexuality. Maybe like starting with competence, because I mean, maybe it is kind of like self-explanatory, like having confidence in being effective at dealing with the, you know, your sexual environment and like, mm-hmm. But is it like what are you looking for when you're studying competence under the umbrella of self-determination theory within a sexual landscape?
That's a great question. So with these studies, we tend to, I mean, you can study it in two different ways. You can study it with like, how did you feel in that interaction?
Right.
So did you feel like you had choice with your partnership? So that would be autonomy. Did you feel like you had, you could, you know, do as you liked or as you needed in that sexual interaction? Did you feel like you were competent in your sexual skills in that sexual interaction? Did you feel connected to your partner in that sexual interaction? So we can talk about it as, you know, during that particular time, how did you feel? And, you know, that gives us a little bit more precise data, because people can usually remember their last sexual interaction a little bit more than, say, in general, how do you approach this? But we can also ask them in general with your partner, you know, how do you see each of these needs being fulfilled? You know, do you feel a sense of connection? Do you feel that your partner is sensitive to, like, your need for connection? Do you feel that your partner is attentive to your desire for, like, choice? Or I can't remember the framing of it. I can actually pull it up and read you some of the items, but you can do it as looking at each of these things within the sexual interaction itself. Or you can look at it more broadly with each partner. And in these studies, we tend to look at it within the sexual interaction with a particular partner. So, you know, we ask, like, with, say, a primary partner or the person you last had sex with, did you feel these particular things, or how much did you feel these particular things?
And how come focus on the particular sexual interaction rather than focus on the general broad scope of all, you know, all current relationships, or like your past history of relationships? Because hearing you say that it makes me think, like, you know, if I was to think about my last sexual interaction with someone under this framework of self-determination theory, I feel like I was quite competent in that interaction. I had full autonomy within that interaction, and I felt very connected and close to my partner in that sense of relatedness. But then when I think about, like, the overall arching self-determination theory framework from, like, that one relationship, maybe my competence waxes and wanes, and the autonomy isn't fully there and, like, realized, and the relatedness, like, you know, same thing. Like, I can see how those two things can be vastly different, you know, even within the same relationship. So what, like, how do you decide, I guess, for what reason do you focus on the one particular interaction in this research rather than focus on the relationship as a whole?
Yeah. So I think it just depends on kind of, I think there's two things here. It depends on what kind of information you want to get. So in one of our studies, you know, we're following people over the course of 21 days, and we're asking them every day, did you have sex today? What was that like? And asking them questions about that specific sexual interaction, and what were their motives on that particular day? What was their satisfaction on that day? And what was their fulfillment like on that day? So we are asking them those specific, like, it is a very interaction specific thing. And then we kind of average it across and be able to kind of make those associations and look at links. The other thing is that with self-determination theory, the idea that having more self-determined reasons for sex, so, you know, having sex for, like, pleasure or closeness, or because you value it, you know, is linked to higher need fulfillment. So these autonomy, competence, relatedness needs, which is also linked to higher satisfaction. That would be true whether you're looking at the interaction level or, like, across the board. So even if it fluctuates, if one day you're not you see this interaction where it's less autonomy, less competence, less relatedness, you'd still see, like, a lower level of satisfaction on those days.
Right.
So the idea is that the theory is kind of the same, whether it's on the interaction or, like, this kind of broader field, but, you know, you're just measuring that a little differently. And I think, you know, if you want to look at the interaction versus, say, one point in time when you're asking people generally, how do you feel about that partner? Like, those, you could get at it either way. But like you said, like, there, if you're looking at more general concept, the idea of those links and the association between those links would be the same.
So While you were asking people these questions, it sounds like you were asking folks who were in both consensual non-monogamous and monogamous relationships. Did you find different motivations for both groups? Did they vary much?
Yeah, so in our first sexual motivation study, we asked so a group of consensually non-monogamous people and a group of monogamous people. And this was like, we just asked them once. This was one study where we just asked, please tell us a little bit about your general motivations and your sex with your partner. And we asked CNM people to report on their primary partner. And so the CNM and monogamous participants, generally people reported these more self-determined reasons for sex, right? So more interested in sex overall, those reasons related to pleasure, related to autonomy, related to valuing sex. However, the CNM participants were more like on average reported higher levels of, in sex for the just enjoying sex for the sake of sex itself, and their own values regarding sex and relationships. And also there's a subcategory of this drive motivation. So feeling compelled by urges in the body. And so they also reported higher levels of sex drive motives. So compared to monogamous people. So those were the only differences that we found in that study, but we didn't find any differences. So we found differences in motivations, but we didn't find any differences in, levels of relationship or sexual satisfaction between these two groups.
It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that, out of the study that stuck out to you as quite surprising, or sort of was a bit of a surprise for you and the folks researching this?
At that time, we have a pretty robust and strong evidence across across a lot of different studies, that looks at these comparisons for CNM and monogamous participants on these indicators of well-being. So say satisfaction, relationship, trust, passion, love, all of these things. And generally across the board, we find that there's either usually no difference, or sometimes CNM people report, maybe higher levels of some of these sexual satisfaction, for example, in some of the studies. So there's that. But at the time when I was doing this research, there wasn't as much of that out. And so I don't know if I was surprised, but I was interested and curious to see this, because I also think that it's not just the comparison, but adding in this idea about motivations, right? So the pattern is the same for the monogamous and CNM people. So what this suggests is that the factors that impact satisfaction among these two groups work similarly. And so I think it's nice to know that relationships, regardless of what structure they're in, kind of share similar key foundational concepts. So when people feel in control of their sexual encounters and are engaging in sex because they value sex or they want to experience pleasure and closeness, they're more likely to feel fulfilled and satisfied in their relationships, regardless of whether they're in a CNM or a monogamous partnership. And so I think while it's not surprising, I think it's important to kind of remember that. And again, that can help with the destigmatization process as well.
Yeah, definitely. Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You mentioned a couple of different ends of the spectrum there of like you said, intrinsic motivation. So the activity itself is pleasurable or because they enjoy feeling close to a partner. And then the extrinsic motivation of to manage feelings of guilt or maybe trying to keep a partner or, you know, it's because of more of an external pressure. But there was one thing in here too that I had never, that kind of caught my attention. And it was individuals may also engage in sex for extrinsic reasons that reflect volition and a person's values, such as having sex because one feels that it's a central component of romantic relationships. So that seems to me a little bit different. That seems to me to say that some people, it's less about the pressure that they feel from a partner or socially and more just like this belongs in a relationship. Mm. So there's like a fine line there between a sense of expectation or pressure to just, I do this because I think it's, maybe it's not even that pleasurable, but I think it's important to maintain my relationship. And I was just found that really funny to see that there in the middle of everything, because I've never heard that before, even though it kind of resonates.
You never heard what before? Yeah.
Just like that particular part, that particular perspective. I'm doing it because I'm enjoying sex, and it may not be because I feel pressured to have sex. It may just be something that I do because, like flossing my teeth, I know it's maintenance for myself and my relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it seems to me like that kind of motivation must be really, like, it must be really difficult. I mean, or it must be like establishing a new habit where you just make it a part of the routine. You know, when I think about motivation, I'm like, how do I get more of that? How do I get more motivated? And I think a lot of people think about motivation like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything in there you can speak to, but.
Yeah. No, I think that when you get it right in the middle there, it's actually also like right in the middle of that self-determination spectrum of motivations, right? It's not quite that intrinsic, you know, I'm doing this because I really value this I think it's because I'm going to find it enjoyable and closeness and pleasure and all of those things. But it's also not like that desire for reward, fear, punishment, peace. That's more on the intrinsic or extrinsic end. It is right in the middle there. And it is a really kind of interesting way of thinking about motivations. Because I think that, you know, especially for, you know, certain groups of people in long-term relationships too, where it's, I'm doing this to maintain the relationship. I don't feel like terrible or bad, like, or like super happy about it, but I think it's important just to continue doing this. And it also kind of speaks maybe perhaps to that, you know, difference in spontaneous desire versus like the reactive desire where, you know, I'm going to do this because I think it's good for maintenance and maybe I'm not feeling like sexual desire right now, but once I get started, maybe I'll start feeling that. And then maybe it'll continue from there and it'll be like a really good experience. So that can also kind of help with motivation later on. Whereas the spontaneous desire is more like sex drive. I want to have this sex for a pleasurable experience right now. And, you know, it looks a little bit different. So I wonder if it could be related to some of that as well. Mm-hmm. But it is an interesting piece that's kind of right in the middle there and a little harder to, I guess, untangle.
Well, and it would kind of depend on like what, like, okay, so autonomy, competence, and relatedness, like, can I still balance all those three needs if my main motivation for sex is maintenance? You know, right. Like, can I still feel a really balanced level of autonomy? And, oh, I guess only if I'm making that decision consciously, or if I'm making that decision consciously, then it could have a definite balancing effects to all three of those. Mm-hmm. It's like, I recognize this about myself. I'm owning it.
I'm taking action. I'm going to be competent about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to nail it when I do it. I feel really close to this person.
And it's going
to
be good for my relationship.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And probably my relationships with everyone, because if I'm satisfied on this level, then I'm more likely to be able to walk around with that in my day. I love this.
This recording's kind of been in the works for a little while, and I know that these are research topics that you've been taking part in over the last little while. What's like, is there anything new that you're kind of looking to tackle or that you're in the midst of researching right now?
Yeah. A lot of my research right now is more focused on sexual health education, and like policy development and sexual health outcomes. But in terms of like this kind of area of research with relationship satisfaction, I'm very curious, and sexual motivation and consensual non-monogamy and all of these topics. One area that we've collected data and it's kind of a little bit on the back burner right now, but I'm hoping that we can start working on it soon, is we collected some data from people who are engaged in non-consensually non-monogamous relationships through ashleymadison.com. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted, like, so I'm like, okay, we've got like monogamous people. We've asked these questions. We've explored consensual non-monogamy. I'm also really curious to kind of unpack some of these ideas in people who are doing this, but are clear, like, because if you're on Ashley Madison, like you're not there, like you're there to try to hide it, right? Like that's the point of Ashley Madison. And there may be some consensually non-monogamous people who are on Ashley Madison, but I do not think that they are the majority of people who are using that site. So we have collected data asking people about their reasons for engaging in non-consensually non-monogamous relationships, asking them about their need fulfillment. We've asked them about their partners at home, or their primary partner, and then their Ashley Madison partner. And I'm really curious to kind of get into that. What's interesting is that, so you know how at the beginning of our conversation, I said that the qualitative research on the CNM people, the consensually non-monogamous people, when you read through it as a data set, it's just like, I want to be authentic. Here's how I'm going against relationship norms. Here's how I want to be myself, and I want to be fulfilled and have my partners be fulfilled. It's a very like positive read. I'm finding with the data, the open-ended questions on Ashley Madison data, it's very different. It's an incredibly different feel, because it's often, I'm doing this because I don't have a relationship with my partner. My partner isn't interested in me. I feel sad. I feel like I'm not a person. I feel like I'm not wanted. And so there seems to be this element of seeking out some things that are related to these three kind of needs. Like, I want to feel alive. I want to feel like a competent person. I want to feel connected to another person. And then doing that through sex, but it's, I just want to feel connection. I want some need to, there's a lack of fulfillment, but there's also like a desire to connect. And that I think is kind of a key difference in what I'm seeing between these two data sets, and these two approaches. And so I think, you know, even just having conversations about the different options for relationship types and what motivations are, and how that can impact relationships, I think can really help people just think about what they need and, you know, how they could maybe open up conversations in their lives, whatever that might look like, just to think about, you know, think about how to open up conversations in their lives with partners or with people, other people in their lives, to think like, how can I figure out a way to move in this world? That's, you know, maybe it goes against the norm sometimes, maybe it doesn't, but like, how can I feel comfortable here and how can I feel autonomous and how can I just feel better in this situation? And I think that, you know, the more conversations we have about that, the better.
I also got the same impression from these papers. I was like, this is all very, very pleasant. And especially the parts that point out that even when people are having consensual non-monogamous relationships with secondary partners, they're still reporting higher level of needs fulfillment and satisfaction in their primary relationships, which I'm going to just go ahead and assume that that's going to be different for the Ashley Madison people.
Yeah.
I don't know though.
Yeah. Maybe
not.
I mean, you like, I just want to say that research is fascinating to me. That is so interesting. I don't know why I always just thought Ashley Madison was like a scam, you know, like that it wasn't really real. And now hearing that you're doing research on it, I'm like, holy fuck, we got to get some from Ashley Madison to come on the show. Like this, I got to talk about that.
They have approached us a couple of times actually. And
have they?
Yeah. And it never really worked out. And then I thought,
oh, we got to go down.
There was
that
a
road.
Major privacy breach at one point, and I thought they got shut down. So,
right.
Apparently they're still going strong.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. They did. And then they came back and, it was apparently addressed their issues.
High demand service. Yeah, it seems
so fascinating.
I know we're getting short on time.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you think we should talk about to sort of wrap this up in a bow for our listeners?
Oh, I mean, I think maybe going back to that idea that fulfilling, loving, and respectful intimate relationships do share these key foundational concepts regardless of relationship configuration. So, you know, whether that is the processes of motivations and how motivations impact our well-being in our relationships, or whether it is good communication and like building trust and intimacy, and, you know, being able to discuss needs in a non-judgmental way. I think that those foundations are really key to relationships, whether those, you know, are in consensual non-monogamous relationships or monogamous relationships. And, you know, thinking about the reasons why you want a specific type of relationship or why you want to have sex can be really important. And so, you know, you can think about those things on your own, you can reflect on them, and then think about why you would want to have a consensually non-monogamous or more monogamous relationship. Think about the reasons you're having sex, and then think about what might have to happen in your relationship for you to kind of move towards some of these more self-determined reasons, for you to feel good and supportive in your, you know, journey towards those kinds of motivations. I think could be helpful for people thinking through how they want to move in their relational lives. Mm-hmm.
I want to just, maybe we don't go down this rabbit hole, but can you change your motivation? Can you go from, maybe this is a rabbit hole. I'm just wondering, like, when you say move towards a new motivation, well, yeah, I feel like that's a whole other conversation.
Well, I think that's a good question, because I think it helps people reflect on what's going on in their life. So if I'm thinking about, oh my God, why have I had sex recently? And I'm thinking, oh, it's because I really wanted to like get praise from my partner, or, oh my gosh, it's because I was feeling really guilty because I went away too much, or, oh my gosh, I felt like, if I'm thinking it's that, and then I'm like, well, and I know that those feelings are more in like the, you know, less self-determined, and I need more, I want to have more of those like other motivations. Like, what would encourage me? What kind of sex, what kind of relationship do I need? What kind of environment do we need in our lives in order to want sex for pleasure, in order to want sex for closeness? And, you know, what is missing in those environments or in those relationships? And can you cultivate some of those things so that you could potentially move towards some of those more self-determined reasons? Mm. Is the sex you're having the sex you want to be having? And if it's not, then that's, you know, another conversation to have and thinking about the kind of sex you want to have and what you need to do to, like, you, and I say you as in like you and your partner is obviously not the one person responsible. But like what could be done to kind of encourage that, the kind of sex you want to have, or an environment, so that you're interested in sex for pleasure or interested in sex for closeness. And are you in a relationship where that's possible?
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer.
This is, I mean, I said at the very beginning, these are my favorite conversations to have on the show with researchers about this type of subject matter, because it's always so fascinating. And I'm probably not alone in saying that I'm walking away from this conversation with a little bit more knowledge on like my own self-determination theory
state.
And what was it? It was fulfillment, my fulfillment needs and how I can go about fulfilling those needs. Jessica, it's always such a pleasure to have you on the show. This has been really fun. And so on behalf of myself and the listeners and Bridie, thank you so much. This has been really great.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there we go. Another conversation with another fantastic researcher.
We're so lucky.
I know.
I take it for granted sometimes.
We're so lucky.
I have a question for you.
Yep.
That what we were talking about, the self-determination theory.
Yeah.
And the three sort of psychological needs.
Competence, autonomy, and relatedness.
Mm-hmm. Something, this has kind of been sticking with me a little bit. So we recorded this conversation with Jessica 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of been weaving in and out through my mind as like, if I have anything going on in my life and I want to look at it in relation to those three points in terms of like, you know, like, let's say this podcast.
Yeah.
Do I feel autonomous in this podcast? Do I feel competent? Mm. Do I feel a sense of relatedness?
Right.
You know, and I've sort of been applying it to different things in my life. And it's been very thought provoking, as well as like going along with the boundaries work that I'm still doing with Kendra Kunov. It's just interesting.
I wish I had more of that skill.
Of thinking about things later?
Yeah. Cause like I do, I feel like I definitely am on the spectrum of ADHD in some regard.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that if I got tested, it probably wouldn't come back like you have severe ADHD, but it would be like, yeah, you have like moderate. And anyway, when we finish recording the show, oftentimes it's like as soon as the recording's over, boop, like the thought, like
retain it.
Yeah, like sometimes Leo will be like, so what did you talk about today on the podcast? And I'll be like, okay, I don't know. Like,
I know.
I mean, I can give you like the Coles notes, like very bare bones, but I don't remember what was said. I don't remember. And like, even this, you know, when we had that conversation with Jessica Wood about self-determination theory.
Yeah.
When we're in that conversation, I'm going, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like, I get this. This resonates with me. Self-determination theory. I should start like thinking about this more. Haven't thought about it until you just brought it up. And I was like, oh yeah, we talked to that woman about that. But you're right. And you know, when I'm thinking about playing chess. You
okay.
Know,
yeah.
I don't feel, it depends on who I'm playing against.
Yeah.
I'll feel competent.
Right. But
to the patron that I'm playing right now, who whooped me. And is continuously whooping me.
Oh.
Thank you. You are making me not feel competent. But you're challenging
growth opportunities.
Yeah. But I feel autonomy there.
But even with the competence piece, don't you think you could feel competent even when you're losing?
Yes, of course. Yes, because I am competent in my learning. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm learning.
Yeah.
I just got into crypto.
Oh God.
I'm trading in crypto now.
Oh God.
And I should take the self-determination theory with me into this endeavor.
Okay.
Because I'm very excited about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ever going to talk about it on the show, nor was I going to talk about it on Sick Boy, but it came up.
Of course it did.
And I'm not going to talk about it much, but self-determination theory. Like I, it's not just for relationships. It's for anything and everything.
Well, I've been thinking about it in terms of school. Like, you know, if I needed any sort of validation that I'm doing the right thing and I'm in the right place, it's like, it's exactly the right amount and the right kind of challenge that I can like meet, but still feel a sense of growth.
And this is the thing about most of the stuff we talk about on the show when we talk about modalities and like theories on navigating relationship. It's like more often than not, you can always take whatever it is that we're talking about and apply it to other things in your life.
Totally. Nothing is,
you know,
nothing is, what's the end of that phrase? And nothing is separate, but like, you know, some people would say the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. Yeah. Maybe that's not exactly the same thing, but I've also been thinking about it because you and I are both doing a 30-day alcohol-free hiatus, and
we could talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
We talked about that at length
on
this coming Feel Good Friday episode on Sick Boy.
Well, I was thinking about it because what happens is like I feel, so we're a week in at this point, a few more days than that. And I feel that this time
I'm
around,
actually a week in. I started Wednesday because I had a movie. I had a thing that I was going to. I didn't tell you because I didn't want to be that guy, but I started Wednesday.
Okay.
So it is a week.
So you're going right up to like what, Christmas Eve then?
I'm going to go to the 23rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about the big day with your friends from away? Are you going to make a special exception for that day too?
Nope.
Okay. Well,
I don't know.
Okay. So this is really interesting, right? Because we have different motivations for doing this break, I think.
Yeah.
And I put a lot of thought into my relationship to substances because, you know, my parents are, they've been in recovery forever, and I've been long aware that I have addictive, behavioral tendencies with substances.
Yeah.
And so this time's been a little bit easier, but I'm asking myself these questions. It's like my relationship with alcohol or my relationship with cannabis, because when I say drugs and alcohol, those are the drugs and alcohol.
And booze.
Yeah. And wine, to be specific.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But is like, I'm not autonomous. I do not have control.
Yeah, so again, only a week in, the first 4 days of that week were, and I honestly can't begin to describe how awful it was. And I wasn't ready for that. Because so here's the thing, is I've drank my whole life. My whole adult life. And I'm never really one to drink and get totally plastered. Like that's a very rare occurrence. But during the pandemic, especially during
early
lockdown, wiping, Lysoling our groceries pandemic.
Like buying 12 bottles of wine at a time.
I started buying a lot of beer at that time. And I was drinking not high amounts every day, but every day consistently drinking some. And if you pull back and look at the week, it's a lot for a week.
Yeah. And the recommended daily number of units for your gender is 14.
No,
units
not
of
the
alcohol.
Daily unit.
No, the weekly.
That's the weekly, yeah.
And mine is
like anything
7.
Above that is abusing alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine was far higher than that.
Yeah, mine too.
So that was when the pandemic, and so I was drinking more than I ever have on a consistent basis because of the pandemic. Then the pandemic cooled off a bit. But I kind of just kept up that habit because it felt really good. I kept an eye on it because I was like, is this negatively affecting my life? Mm-hmm. Is it affecting my work? Is it affecting my relationships? Is mm-hmm. it like, and it wasn't real, like it was, it to my knowledge, it wasn't. But in stopping, mm-hmm. I realized very quickly how incredibly dependent I was on beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the last like 3 or 4 days or 3 days, I've felt really great. I felt great, really clear, lots of energy, productive, yada, yada, whatever. So it's definitely changing my entire relationship to alcohol. And the conversation I had with the guys, they were like, do you think you'll go back to what you were doing before once this like little hiatus is over? And I don't think I will.
Your tolerance was going to go way down
as
well.
I don't think I'll go back to what I was doing, but I'm not going to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. Like forever,
you're not sober now.
No. Cause I like it. I like the feeling of alcohol. I enjoy alcohol a lot. But it did give me a moment. It gave me a moment of pause to go, oh, okay. I didn't realize how much that vice was sunk its teeth into me. And it was a really, no pun intended, sobering realization. Anyway.
Whenever I take a break, the first day, especially first evening, and then the whole like next day is just like, I start noticing how frequently my mind goes to, well, you could start tomorrow, or how about you just gradually taper out? So have just one glass of wine. Like I'll talk myself through all these scenarios of like bargaining with myself.
Yeah. See, I wasn't having any of that. I was more so going, fuck, I can't fucking drink. Like it was just that. It was just like fucking fuck.
That's good.
You know? Although I will say this, non-alcoholic beer, there's some good ones out there.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. Upstreet, good job. Libra is great. And this here, Budweiser actually makes a really good zero alcohol.
I might try one sometime. I'm not really into the, I've never been super into the carbonated beverages, but.
Oh, it's great.
It might just feel nice.
I had an Erdinger.
I guess there's.
At a show the other night. That was okay.
Erdinger, is that a beer?
Yeah, it's like this big fucking bottle. Yeah, they're at typically at most pubs and stuff. Like,
okay,
it's like the old non-alcoholic beer that's been around forever.
Oh, okay. I guess there's non-alcoholic wine. There's probably some good non-alcoholic wine out there.
Yeah, it's
too.
Called grape juice, Welch's.
Okay, ooh, I tried the grape. It's a grape kombucha. And it's really wine-like,
right?
Except
okay,
for carbonated, but it has that right taste.
So anyway, the reason why I stopped drinking is because I wanted to just be really clear when I start Trikafta, so that I can have really just like actually feel what it's going to do to me, like how it's going to make me feel different without any kind of like clouded judgment.
Yeah.
And here's a crazy thing: I picked up my Trikafta today.
Wow. And for anyone listening who might have no idea what you're talking about,
Trikafta is essentially, it's not a cure for CF, but it's like, it's a drug that treats at the source. So it doesn't treat the symptoms, it treats at the source, like at the genetic level.
Wow.
So it's like a genetic modulator, I think is the technical term for the drug. And I started, the first dose will be tomorrow morning.
Wow, babe.
Yeah, it's fucking intense.
Do you feel like, are you marking the, sorry, just watching Donut try to climb onto the table.
Peanut furniture.
Are you marking the occasion in any other way? Obviously there's no like drink celebration, but how about like some journal writing or a nice bath with some candles to this transition in your life?
No, I'm just going to start taking it.
Okay.
Yeah, with a fatty meal.
Okay.
As required.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So not cereal for breakfast.
No, I gotta get some like eggs and bacon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's an exciting time. I, and it's fucking annoying. I put a story up on my Instagram. And so many people, thank you so much. I don't want to sound like an asshole. It's really nice.
People are blowing up your phone?
But my phone's just blowing up. And it's I'm like, why did I put a story up? I knew this would happen.
Yeah. You know, you can turn off all those notifications, right?
I should.
I should do that for the next week. That's your next vice. Because your phone pops, dings, and vibrates.
Got to keep an eye on that crypto market. You know what I'm saying?
I guess. But maybe that has something to do with your borderline ADHD well.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, really love that conversation with Jessica Wood. I mean,
really good food for thought.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, we got a letter.
Yeah, we do. And again, no explicit permission has been given to use names, so I'm just going to use your initials, L-O. And
we'll just stick with Guilin. Go.
Oh yeah, Guilin.
Back to the OG.
Guilin, but I also want L-O to know that. That I'm reading their email. So Guilin,
they wrote it. They'll hear it. Logo. That was me.
That's true. This.
It's odd.
This is a throwback.
Someone wrote something the same as what I wrote.
But her name was Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
Not Gwendolyn.
Guilin.
Gwendolyn is a character in a short film that I'm making for a school project.
Gotcha.
Okay. So this email is in reference to something we talked about on our 201st episode about how to mark special occasions with loved ones in maybe different ways. And we loved hearing your stories, and we'd love to hear more. So with more holidays coming up, perhaps you can send us your traditions.
Yeah.
So... Hi, Bridie and Jeremy.
Hello.
I'm just listening to episode 201, and I love your discussion about your anniversary weekend. My husband and I are in a pretty conventional relationship, but I wanted to share our last big celebration because not many people get a milestone like this. Our birthdays are exactly 2 days apart, and we started dating less than 3 weeks before we turned 16. We're 33 now. And we were able to celebrate or calculate the day we had been together for half our lives.
Wow.
Which was approximately 5 weeks before our 32nd birthdays. We had all our close friends over for a night of celebration, and it was so nice that they could spend our half our lives together day with us.
That is so cool.
That felt like a much cooler and more important milestone to us than our wedding anniversary, since we didn't get married until we were 27. The usual timekeeping that starts at the marriage date ignores so much of our time together, so isn't nearly as fun. Mm. If you're still sharing these stories, you can share this one too. My mom will be excited to hear if you do, as she listens to you too. Haha. Hope you're all doing great and so glad to keep listening to season 3.
Well, that's fucking cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations on
half our lives together.
Half our lives together day.
That's really cool.
That's wild.
I have. Besides, like, the people, you know, in my family, there is, and this milestone passed a while ago, but it just comes to mind because my best friend, my oldest friend from grade 4, 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
I'm obviously 37 now. We were hanging out last weekend and I was like, yeah, you know, we were referring to something. And I was like, well, that was 25 years ago. That's insane.
Yeah.
I've known her for more than, like, we've been besties since.
You and I wouldn't be able to ever celebrate this, right? Because of the gap in our age. Mathematically, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Well, I feel very pressured to figure this out, like, in this recording, but we would have
to be. Let's say we started dating when I was 21.
Yeah. So when you're 42,
it would be my half.
Yes.
Of my life, but it won't be yours.
No, it won't be half of.
So we won't actually be able to do that.
No.
Yep.
We'd have to
calculate some mean average date that
We'll get back to you with that date and make it a special date.
Yeah, but it's not going to be real.
It won't be perfect.
Yeah.
Not like you two.
It'll be fake half your our yes. lives together day.
Oh well.
Folks, hope you enjoyed this episode. We really appreciate each and every one of you. Especially our patrons.
Oh, patrons. Thank you so much for all your support.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be here without you, and that's no joke.
And if you want to be a part of that, of us being here and you playing a role in keeping us here, go to patreon.com/turnmeon and show your support. And if you want to support in other ways, you can leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or just hit follow on Spotify. And and you know, if you've been jamming on Spotify and you saw your yearly wrap up, tag us on Instagram. I'd love to see the hours put in.
Hours put into Turn Me On Podcast.
Yeah.
And if you want to send us a story or reach out to us, we love hearing from you. Just who's listening, who's out there, what you're up to, why you are listening. We love to hear any and all of it.
Yep.
And we just hope you're taking care out there.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Go touch yourself.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.